Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. Welcome back, everybody. It's the IT Babble podcast. This is Patrick. This is episode 156. And that was something very loud, a loud child in the background.
Yeah, I'm like in a business center in a hotel, and I can't control the people, so.
No problem. Obviously, I'm joined with Tony, who is in South Korea for the summer. Tony, it was the 4th of July. Did you do anything special over there in Korea?
No, because they don't really know what it is, so we didn't. And my wife's Canadian, and so we also didn't do anything for Canada Day, so.
That's fine.
Yeah. So, it's a good balance of doing nothing.
But what about the World Cup? It is in full swing right now. I don't even know if I don't follow soccer or football, as it's called everywhere else. Is the South Korean team, is it doing well?
Well, I know they're not doing well anymore. Okay, so South Korea, what they did is they basically made it possible for Mexico to level up in the World Cup, and they took Germany out of the World Cup. So everyone really likes South Korea for doing that. So it's like they're not in it anymore, but they're everyone's favorite because they were like, yeah, they made it possible for Germany not to compete anymore, and they helped Mexico. So a lot of Mexican people, and I work with a few Mexican people, I've noticed like on their Facebook, there's now a combination Mexican South Korean flag.
That is awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, but one guy that lives in my building, he's from England, so he's pretty pumped because they just beat Sweden.
Yeah,
and they're going into the semifinals against Croatia, and I'm sure he's pretty pumped. But everybody wants France gone, and I have seen only a couple of games, but I can tell you, and I don't know anything at all about soccer at all. I don't know anything.
Yeah,
but I do watch contact sports. And I watch, MMA and football and contact sports and wrestling. And based on that alone, I can't see anybody beating Belgium. These guys are massive. I was like, seriously, I was like, is this the NBA? They are huge. It looked like the Belgian goalie could stand up and just wrap his hands around the top of the goal. Like, I'm like... They're just massive. Like, I don't know if they've been holding these guys back for like a decade and just training them somewhere secret, but I think just based on physical size, like, because it's an exhausting sport, so if they're in good shape and they're just physically colliding, the Belgian team's gonna wear anybody down. And when I watch Belgium played Tunisia, and Tunisians are not small people, and they just dwarf them. Wow. And I'm like, man, yeah, people just run into these Belgians and just bounce off and fall to the ground.
That's awesome. That's wow. Maybe yeah. I should watch some of the World Cup. I certainly can.
Yeah, just watch. Just go to highlights. Just go YouTube. Unlike the Olympics,
yes, right.
YouTube has daily highlights for the World Cup. I still don't understand that.
Oh.
I couldn't show Olympic highlights to kids in like homeroom, and that's sad.
It's good old copyright.
Did I mention that the Olympics were in South Korea, and I still couldn't show highlights in South Korea?
That's the best. It's the best.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Thanks, YouTube.
Well, we got a great agenda. We're going to be talking about your toast pony, Tony. I said pony.
That was hilarious. Toast Pony.
I like it. It's awesome.
Can that be the name of the show?
Yeah, Toast I like it. Pony. Toast Pony. I like it. I'm writing it in here. Toast Pony, so I don't forget. Called Tech Savvy, Are You Sure? By Tony DeBredo. I got my hands on an AirTame, which is a way to connect a computer to a television or a projector wirelessly. And I've been testing out, since we're getting Chromebooks at our school next year, I've been testing out some management software, and I found two that I liked, and I tested them both out, GoGuardian and Netop, and I'll talk about those as well and which one we're going with and why. But first, I wanted to bring this up because this hit us in the face unexpectedly. And I saw, I started researching and I saw this article a year ago on Tidbits by Adam Anks called Important High Sierra Changes for IT Admins. And basically what it's saying is if you image High Sierra and you just kind of push it out using the Mac OS server, like if you just do it like you normally do it, which I guess is called monolithic imaging. I wasn't aware of that. Something new I learned.
And I did not know that term either. I just called it imaging. But go ahead.
Yeah, I just called it fails. And we were not able to image our... Now, we're a small school, so we're talking 40... We're talking, let's see, maybe like 65, 70 computers. So not huge, right? And our solution was we put the image... We like set up one computer the way we wanted it, and then we use Migration Assistant and Thunderbolt cables to set up all the other computers. It was very tedious. It took a very long time. I mean, it took us about a week, where it should have taken us about, I don't know, 2 days to do this. And so, but you, Tony, you said you've been able to successfully image and push out that image on High Sierra.
Yeah, so it's a little tricky. So first, I do have the newest Apple server, and I also have software called Deploy Studio, which is free.
Yeah.
You have to use them together. I can't make it work with just one, just like you. I can't just do it with OS X server, and I can't just do it with Deploy Studio. Deploy Studio will actually create a bootable external hard drive, but I haven't tried that at all. So this is a solution I'm using. You pretty much have to be familiar with all the entire process. Like, you have to know how to set up netboot images, and you also have to know how to set up a network to make this work. Now, a lot of people will just run these on their normal network, and that is a huge mistake. So if you have Deploy Studio running on your network and somebody boots into their Mac in the wrong way, they don't pay attention, or they're just browsing around in their startup in their system preferences, they will see the image on the network, and that will basically let them boot into the image.
Yeah.
So what I do is I have a separate network set up in the office, and I have a separate router and everything in there, so it's not in the main network. But I have the router I have set up is actually getting its DNS from the main school network. That's the only thing that's the same. And this is all important because when you make these images, they remember the network settings, and you need them to be able to start. Like, because the thing is, like, you can get stuck where you're booting up the machine and it needs a network connection. Now, I do have administrative accounts that you can boot into, but the basic concept is you want to be able to make a machine and hand it over to people, and they should be able to log into it.
Yeah.
Like, you want to reduce the amount of steps. But we had so many issues last year because the service, this is another thing that's new with, like, Mac OS. Like, it was, what's the one before this one? This is High Sierra. What's the other one? Sierra?
Yeah, Sierra. Yep.
Okay, so last year, this was the problem. We installed a login agent. So, like, let's say you use Active Directory and you bind the computer so people can log in. We installed something like that using Jump Cloud. And I installed it as the administrator. And then when people were logging, and then this is what should happen. Like, I put it on the laptop, and I can actually go into Jump Cloud and say, this laptop shows up. It's laptop number 12. And I'm like, this is Patrick's laptop, and I can choose your name in Jump Cloud, and then about 5 seconds later, you will get a user account made on the Apple for you, so you can log into it with your Jump Cloud certificate, with your Jump Cloud credentials. But what was happening is every single teacher's username, account, everything was going onto the Mac, so every teacher showed up on every Apple, which wasn't a huge problem, but it was like not the purpose. I didn't want people like being able to log into each other's laptops easily. And I found out that in order to, for Sierra and High Sierra, in order to make all this login stuff work, you actually have to set everything up as the root user, which means you have to go in, enable the root user manually, and then install the other pieces. So that's very annoying, and it's an extra step that you just can't get around. So basically, the way I have it set up now is when new machines come in, they can go into this office, and using Deploy Studio, they get the customized version of that of the operating system. And that contains one administrative account, it contains my personal account, and one of the IT guys' personal accounts. And it also contains Chrome, VLC, and a few other applications. And then that's it. Then when the teacher shows up to get their laptop, we open the laptop up the first instance, change the sharing name to their name, and then that's when we install the login agent. Because that only actually takes a few seconds, and it's a lot better than us making images that all have the same root user on them, because that is a whole other security problem.
Yeah.
So anyway, I understand your pain. Last year, we did do a bunch of computers in the way that you're doing them with the migration assistant. But I allowed a person who was helping us to do that. And because migration assistant, every time you run it, you have to be very consistent, right? There's all these options and you have to be super consistent.
Yeah.
And this person wasn't. So on like half the laptops, he forgot to do stuff. So I was like, no, like not. So then we had to re-image all of them because he wasn't paying attention. So the one reason I do like the Deploy Studio option, it's a little annoying to get going, but once you do have it running, people can't mess it up. They just select the image and then they just wait for it to finish. They really can't make a mistake.
Well, yeah.
So I think it depends on your team.
And we are small, and you know, the IT member who was in charge of this project, he definitely did his research and due diligence. He tried a whole number. He had been working on it off and on for about a month, and then he just decided on. He's like, you know what? We're small. We have a small number of machines that we're doing, and these are on a laptop card, so you know they're not for an individual.
Right.
And he's like, this is what I'm going to do. And I was like, he ran it past me. I'm like, hey, that sounds fine as long as it's working, man. So, but we will definitely look into this. And I think this would be a far better solution going into long term as opposed to just doing migration assistant every time.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. That's good stuff. And if you could email me some of that stuff, that would be even better that I could show it to him. That would be awesome. So. If you don't mind.
Or we can do, I don't know, it might be easier just to do set up a session where I go into the office and just, I get on the server, the deploy server,
yep.
And install Skype on it, and I can just do a screen sharing with you guys and walk you through how I've got it going.
Okay, yeah, that could work. Yep, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Sweet, sweet, sweet. And now, in order to do that, Tony, you have to be very tech savvy to figure that kind of stuff out. I mean, you just have to be. So are you tech savvy, Tony?
No. I am not, and I never want to be.
Okay, so tell us about your post here, because it was very good. It was really, really, really good.
I've actually had a few people contact me privately and be like, yes, I totally agree with you. because they've been in meetings, you know, like I have, where you're sitting there and you're like, how could you let this happen? And then they're just explaining it, and they're like, but I'm tech savvy, so I thought it was fine. I'm like, that doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. Basically, it's just one of these, you know, one of these terms, and I think it gets pushed into like PD programs and training programs, and it's just so generic that it doesn't mean anything. You know, it's like saying, I'm an amazing driver. That of what? Of cars, of trucks, of semi-trucks, race cars. And that's really the problem, right? Because technology is highly segmented and specialized. And yeah. Some of the stuff like, man, I don't even do this. Like, we have a guy that comes in and does it. Or you do something all the time, like, and you're good at it because you do it all the time. And then all of a sudden you get a new system and you don't have to do it anymore. and then 2 years goes by and you have to do it again, there's no way you're at the same level that you were 2 years prior because you haven't done it for 2 years.
Yeah.
And then products change too. And I think this is what drives me crazy. People will use a product for a long time and they'll be like, yeah, I'm tech savvy. I'm really good at like Google Drive. And then Google Drive changes and, you know, they're just trying to do the same stuff like they used to do, but it doesn't work anymore. Mm-hmm. And they don't understand it because they're tech savvy, so they should understand it. It's that kind of logic that just kills me.
Yeah.
And I think my message is that the stuff is always changing and you've got to be research savvy. You got to research constantly. And if you're working with like student data or financial information or anything that's very serious and private, you got to research that stuff all the time, like new privacy rules and regulations, are there new techniques out there on the market for doing certain things?
Yeah.
Are there plugins to help you? Do those plugins carry some kind of risk? Like I was looking at some plugins for, I can't remember what it was for, but it doesn't really matter. But when I looked at how this plugin worked, it actually sent the data to a third party and then it gave you something to download. I'm like, I can't use that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and a lot of people would be like, yeah, I figured it out. I installed a plugin. I'm tech savvy. It's like, you just sent all of our data to like India. That's what you did. You know, that's a good use of your time.
Yeah. I've seen people, you do that with I'm guilty of this, Chrome extensions. Like I used a Chrome extension a few years back and I needed to use that same Chrome extension. So I just installed it, but it hadn't been updated in 3 years. And Chrome has changed a lot in 3 years. And so it didn't work properly. And in fact, it even caused me problems where I couldn't fill in any forms online. No, I couldn't do anything. Anything that I could fill in, and for some reason, that extension was the root of that evil. And I had to go and actually just remove it. And I was like, okay, all right, that's it. I'm done.
Well, the other thing too is, you know, it's easy sometimes to make a good decision in the moment. Like we have an emergency. Let's do this. I think it will work. And it does work, but that's a short-term solution. And then people feel like if they can make those, they can make long-term solutions in the same way. And, one kind of rule that I have and that I put in the article is to do no harm. Like, when you do something, you need to have a long-term view of it, and you need to ask yourself, in 5 or 10 years from now, is what I'm doing going to hurt the students? Is it going to hurt the teachers? Is it going to cause some kind of problem down the line after the student leaves? I've been running into people who are just, you know, the way that they're talking, it's like that it's like they work in separate places, but they work at the same school. Like, you work in the elementary school. And you work in the high school, and your kids go from the elementary school to the high school. Like, you can't have this, like, view, you know. You need to think about when the student comes in the door, what their whole life is going to be like until they leave, and then after. I had a conversation with somebody a few weeks ago because I was looking at some stuff that was definitely going to be a problem for kids who were going to go to university, and they're like, but the kids are only in grade 9 now. I'm like, it doesn't matter that they're in grade 9 now. First off, you don't know when they're going to take a test and start applying to university. They can technically start in grade 10. But I'm like, this is a problem, and it's going to negatively impact their ability to get like a visa, a student visa. And we have to fix it before it's a real problem. Like, we can't wait. We have to do it now.
Yeah.
And they were kind of arguing with me about it. And I'm like, I understand that you made a mistake, but we have to fix this because the students aren't here to go to grade 8 and grade 9. They're here to go to university after they leave. So anything that we do that hurts them from going to university is a problem, at least as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And it's the same with teachers. When I set up IT systems or I set up anything, I always like to try to build stuff so the teachers have to do some work on their own so that they're learning how things work. And a lot of people don't like that, but I'm not doing you any favors if I build some kind of weird ecosystem that isn't like has nothing in common with the outside world. And then when you leave the school, you go to another school, you don't have any skills. can't do anything. So, you know, I try to think along those lines all the time. Like, I want people to be self-sufficient, and I want them to have confidence in what they're doing. I want students to, like, be able to leave and contact us 5 years later and say, hey, I need paperwork, and we have the paperwork, and it's correct, and it helps them. Yeah. And so that's how I'm thinking. That's how I try to think about things as much as possible. But I don't think, you know, and then I look at different technology to facilitate it. I don't consider myself savvy in anything except maybe planning, and that's about it.
That's good. Yeah, that's awesome. You know, I mean, that's fantastic. I don't think a lot of people, and I don't know how many teachers walk into the office for, and they're just like, oh gosh, I'm sorry, I'm just not tech savvy. I was like, you don't have to be, don't be sorry about not being tech savvy at all. It's nothing to
do. Oh yeah, that's,
you know,
I shortened my article. I had a whole other section I wanted to write about how saying things like tech savvy polarizes people. They're either like, oh, I'm tech savvy, or I'm not. Like, that's not true.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't, you know, like, take anything at all. Like, let's go out into the wilderness, okay? Statistically, if there's three of us, we have a better chance of survival because we all have different skills. We help each other. We work as a team. You might be wilderness savvy, like in Vermont, but then you go to Nevada in the high desert and you're dead. You have no idea. I mean, that's, you can't be like, I'm wilderness savvy, and oh, I'm not, I'm going to die. It's like, no, like, there's just too many variables.
Yeah. And I people are just like, oh, I'm so sorry, I just don't know how to, I'm not very tech. And I'm just like, it's okay. It's fine. You're a great teacher. You're a great teacher. You're a great educator. And that's what you need to, don't, this isn't something that is negative to you. This is something in your, I don't know. I whenever they come, whenever people come in, I'm just like, look, you're doing the right thing by coming in and asking. And I probably don't know it either. So, but we're going to figure it out together. And so I guess those people liked what I had to say there. That was very good. Now, Tony, there is something out there where you don't have to be, where anybody can use it. You don't have to be tech savvy at all, and it is called an AirTame.
What about AirWolf?
Oh, you know, you sent me a great AirWolf video, and it is blocked in the United States.
No.
NBC Universal has blocked it. I can't watch it. I know.
All right.
It's AirWolf versus Blue Thunder.
Yes.
And two very, yeah. I grew up with both those things. I didn't like the Blue Thunder TV show, but the movie was great. Okay. Anyway, yeah. AirTame. It's for those that, who don't know. It's just a little device that plugs into an HDMI port, kind of like a Roku stick or an Amazon Fire stick. And then you have a little. It draws power from a USB port, or they do have like a regular plug, but it plugs in on the AirTame as a USB. And then you turn on your projector or your TV, and a picture comes up, and it says, download the AirTame app to configure the AirTame. And then once that's done, it says, if you want to connect to this, go to AirTame. It gives you an address. You go there, you download an AirTame client. And if you're on the same network, it'll see it, and you just connect. And it doesn't matter if you're Windows or Mac. It'll just connect. Limited connectivity with mobile phones, Android or iOS, it doesn't matter. And they're working on Chromebook connectivity right now. It's in the beta, but they are working on it. And this thing costs in between $249 and $299 US. It's super easy to set up, and when you're not using it, you can use it as a digital signage. So you could actually say, look at this Google slideshow, and it'll just sit there and cycle through the Google slideshow. And there are some other services that it'll work with that'll do that. And we're buying two of them. We have one. We're buying another one. The reason why we're buying it is that we have people who come to the school, whether they're doing a workshop or a presentation, and they have a Windows computer, and we have Apple TVs, and it doesn't help them. And so we have to run around, and we have to find cables, and we have to find adapters, and we have to... So AirTame solves that problem. It's small. It's very portable. It'll plug into anything with an HDMI and a USB port, and it just works. And the image quality is okay. It's not great. But I think they've sacrificed image quality in order to have a more robust connection between your computer and the Airtain, which I think is what it, that's a problem that our teachers are facing with the Apple TVs.
Yeah, Apple TVs are horrible.
Yeah.
So I can't get Airtains, but I've done the same thing. I've got a Korean version. It's not as nice, but it's pretty good. It's called a Two Keys device.
Yeah.
And we've got two of them. It's pretty good, and so far I'm happy with it. I do think the does the Airtain require you to have a USB plug for power, or does it just need the one connection?
It needs a USB plug for power, but it does come with a like a traditional power plug if you wanted, and just like a long USB cable. So
yeah, okay, it's the same as the two keys. So for anybody out there who's looking at displays, I mean, you gotta start like thinking about ways to not just get display systems, but how to manage them. So I think the Airtain is definitely an awesome way to go.
It is, yeah.
And again, but we still use a lot of Barcos, and the reason I like the Barco still is it does have really good management features, and it, you know, it does allow for video and audio streaming. The quality's good. The other thing I like about the Barco above the Two Keys unit that I have is that the Two Keys has a thing that attaches to the, like, it's a little box and it goes on the back of the TV or the projector. The Barco box is fatter, it's bigger, it looks like a router, but it also has kind of like professional mounts on it. So you can actually mount it properly to the bottom of a normal projector, like a classroom projector, or you can mount it on the wall like you would like an access point. So I do like that because it's a lot more stable. It's like just really stable. I mean, it's indestructible. But it's also kind of expensive.
Yeah, so that's the thing right there. Yeah.
The Two Keys box is not as robust, but it's also lightweight. So like my preferred deployment model is that you find a way to power the box that connects to your display. You find a way to power that and you connect it to the back of the display, or you connect it to the top of the projector. So the stuff, you can't even see it. It's hidden. And then all you need are the little adapters like the Airtain has, and you can, you know, you can even share them. Like you can give an adapter to a kid and they can put their screen up. It's nice.
That's kind of nice. With the Airtain, yeah, it's just... Yeah, they're individual units, but what's nice about them is that when you buy one, you get a free cloud account. And so what this cloud account is for management. So you can, if you have one Airtain or 100 Airtains, you can actually log in and see all of them.
You can it looks really nice.
It does. You can see what you can restart them, you can push images to them, you can update the software. So that's a problem we're running with the Apple TVs is that we have different versions. And sometimes they just stop working, and it's because they haven't been updated properly. Even though auto update is on, but there's no way for us without actually pulling the unit down and then taking it to the IT office and plugging it in. There's nothing we can do about that. And the Airtain gives us the ability to wirelessly manage it no matter where it is. So,
I think the Airtain overall is better because it's just a much simpler deployment. So, I'm going to be keeping an eye on them as soon as I can order some at a decent price overseas. I'm going to consider doing it.
Yeah, and I think if you're looking for a wireless solution, I think an Airtain is a good. Maybe don't go all in with Airtain, but it might be a good place to start. So you and your staff can figure out, wow, this is what we like, this is what we don't like. And so if you look at other solutions, then you have something concrete and tangible with which to compare it with. And you kind of, yeah. So you're not just kind of researching and reading and saying, yeah, looking at comparison. You're actually, yeah. And it's not too expensive to get started with, which is another good thing. So anyhow, there you go. I like it.
I'm sorry about the noise in the background. I actually just gave somebody a mean look around the corner. They were having some kind of emotional breakdown. And they're like 20 feet away, and I don't know what's going on. So I
no
put
problem.
My head up. Well, let me see if I can still hear him. He's still going off quite a bit. I I think it's literally about duty-free shopping. It's pretty sad.
Hey, you but don't understand.
I do want the audience to know that I did give them a very mean look. And they're like, you're the only non-Asian person in the entire area, so you leave us alone. We're going to be as loud as we want, but I'm doing what I can.
That's all right. It's the adventure of podcasting and in different locations. So
I just hope people can hear. I just hope people can hear.
Yeah, yeah. If not, I'll go in and tweak the audio. So the great thing.
Yeah,
about
just
Zoom
make sure when you can take my voice down and amplify the very loud screaming man in the background who is complaining about duty free.
Yeah, I will. I definitely will. That's awesome. Love it. Anyway, moving on to our last topic here, Chromebook monitoring tools. So when we started looking at Chromebook, one of the things that every teacher talked to us, they said, we would love a way for us to monitor them. Right now, we're not using Apple Classroom. We're going to be using it next year. Man, he's intense there. So
this guy is far away. Hold on. I'm going to see if I can
give another.
I've got, I'm gonna lower the mic a bit, see if that helps.
All right.
Can you still hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. I can hear.
Okay, is he still as bad?
It's okay. I'll go back and tweak it in. I'll tweak it and drop it down.
I don't know if he's tweakable. This guy's out of control. All right, go ahead.
So we started looking at management tools where teachers could get a quick screen, take a look at screen and see what each kid is doing with their Chromebook, right? Make sure they're on task, all that good stuff. And so we found two that we liked. One is called Go Guardian and the other is called Kneetop. And they're both very similar in the sense that you log in, you have a class, you make a class. So those students are on their Chromebooks. You can see, you get a thumbnail view of what every student is doing. And that thumbnail updates like every like a second or two. So it's almost like a real time view.
Okay.
So, but they're very different when you get into the deeper features. And Kneetop is much more simpler than Go Guardian, and it is a bit cheaper as well. So I'll put links to them in the show notes here. Kneetop, here's what you can do. You have to make a Google Classroom, and then it syncs with Google Classroom, and so you can see the kids. And on the admin side, on the Google admin side, you push through a very specific Kneetop app to the student Chromebooks. Oh man,
okay.
He's getting closer. It sounds like he's like right behind you.
He's not. He's hold on. I'm wheeling back out. I don't know. They're pretty far away.
All right.
Yeah. I just looked at him again. They have orange juice now, so maybe that'll help.
That'll help. So okay. So Kneetop. The trick. The special feature with Kneetop is you can lock all the screens, just like Go Guardian. But the special feature for Kneetop is you can open up a student screen and watch it in real time. Like you can watch exactly what they're doing. Like it'll take up your whole screen and you can see what they're doing. It's like you're right there with them. Or you can take your screen and push it out to all the students and you can show it as like a demonstration, which is kind of neat. And that's Kneetop. And you can, of course, push open a tab. You can lock their screens down if you want to. Go Guardian does those things as well. But what Go Guardian does that's a little bit better is that when you make an active session, it actually records and keeps a record of that active session of that classroom. And so you can go and you can see a timeline of every student and what tabs they have open and how long they were on those tabs. So if a kid was looking at ESPN.com for 25 minutes and he didn't get his work done, well, you know why. And you've got that proof right there, which is kind of nice. It's a way for you to monitor and help keep them from getting as distracted. Another thing that's nice on Go Guardian is that you can go and shut down all the tabs. You can actually shut down tabs and you can limit the number of tabs. You're like, okay, for this class, you can only have three tabs open, which is kind of
that's good.
Yeah.
Now, do you have to do it? So here's I have a couple questions.
Go for it.
I've been looking for something like this because what I'm looking for, based on like the model that I kind of believe in, What I want to do is basically let kids work fairly freely. We already have a lot of stuff on the network. But kids who are just out of control, I want to take their BYOD devices away, give them a school Chromebook. So that would be 10 to 20 students at any given time total.
Okay.
Would I just put them all in one big class that runs all day long to manage them?
Ah, okay. Kneetop can't really help you with that. But okay. Go Guardian can. So Go Guardian has a teacher version, and they have an and they have an administrator version. So we're just getting the teacher version. But if you get the administration version, they have what do they call it? I think it might even be called something as simple as timeout, where you can put a student into timeout, and it's like its own OU, and it's pretty much locked down. And you can whitelist certain websites. You can like you can only visit these 20 websites, and that's it. And that is it. And there is no way there is no way for them to get around that at all.
Right, because they log into the Chromebook. So you just have to set the Chromebook so that they only log into it with their school ID, and then then it's limited.
That's right, yeah. So make sure you're on the Chromebook as the administrator. Because you were saying in Korea, you're telling me before we started recording that you can't get licenses, that they just the education licenses where you can manage them through the admin console.
Right, but there might be a way to log into the Chromebook and set up an account, right?
Oh, yeah.
So that, and then prevent people from using other accounts.
Absolutely.
I'm going to work on that. Again, I'm not tech savvy because I had no idea this existed until today. So lesson learned. So Patrick, how much is Go Guardian? How much is it going to cost?
Okay, so Kneetop, I mean, they're both very affordable. Okay, so there's no server, there's no hardware you're installing. Kneetop was something like $2 per user, like $2.80 per user, or $3 per user. Go Guardian is about $5.50 per user. And of course, if you have more users, right, the cheaper it gets. It's one of those deals. But Go Guardian has a great team. Their support is super fast. And like the admin is... It's just great. It's just really, really nice. I like it. I think for our and also even though we're getting just the teachers, I can still centrally manage that. I can create all the classes for all our teachers at all the students in there because it's really easy for me to do it with because I have access to our school information system and I can create these lists and just upload them. It's so fast for me to do it. Where Kneetop is, it's kind of more the teacher has to make the Google Classroom and then it syncs and you know. So, we're going with the Go Guardian, even though it's a little bit more expensive. We think going forward, it's a good one. And if we want to get more robust control over our Chromebooks, Go Guardian does offer us that. So I like it. Yeah. I mean, we did have one student this year who was on an inappropriate site for a little while. And we had to kind of dig through like our security application, which we've talked about in previous podcasts, to figure out. And then we're like, okay, but here we open up Go Guardian. We're like, oh, there it is. There's the date. There's the student. And there's the timeline. They were on this. They were completely off task for 15 minutes. And yeah, we've got, you know, real proof kind of a thing. So. Yeah, and one thing that's nice about both of them is that you can create. You can be like, for this class, I only want them to go to these three websites, for whatever reason, or these 10 websites, and you can kind of lock them down.
I think for me, it's just like, if I give these students these Chromebooks, obviously the students are already having some problems and. They're not going to be responsible with the Chromebooks either. So I need a little extra. I need a little extra software for management. I want it to be easy, and I'd like as many features as possible so that I can make sure they're not trying to use the Chromebooks at inappropriate times, after school hours, all this other stuff.
Yeah.
So.
And these tools are very, very, very good. Go Guardian is very robust. But even the teacher version is pretty darn robust. But yeah, the admin one, they do have an option where you can take this kid and you'd be like, you know what, this kid, and you can just put him in, they call it the penalty box. That's what they call it, the penalty box. You put him in the penalty box, and the penalty box locks it down. They can't do anything with it. You can say, okay, you know, Google Drive, Gmail, these like four or five sites, but that's it. It's just locked down. The kid cannot do anything other than that. And the admin one also has, like, if they're searching inappropriate things, it will flag them and it will send you a report and be like, hey, this person is researching adult websites. You know, you may want to look into it. And so, I mean, I don't know. We didn't think we really needed that so much with just our third, fourth, and fifth graders. So we decided to not. But no, their support is good. Their people are good. Everything is cloud-based. So I would be really surprised if they wouldn't do business with you. And yeah, they're just it's pretty impressive. I liked it.
So. All right. Well, I've already sent them a little inquiry form. Netop is not available in South Korea, so that one's off the table.
Ah, there you go. There you go.
You know, I don't think a lot of people realize, like, when you move around the world, like, there's just, again, you can't be tech savvy because things aren't available.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's very, yeah. And especially when you were in China, when we were both in China, that was a whole nother set of hurdles to go over. And so it's so nice being here in the U.S. where a lot of this stuff is developed. And it really is just a phone call away. So, but no, they're really good. They gave me a great webinar. Let me test things out. Yeah, it's good stuff. Good stuff.
All right, man. It's a pretty good agenda.
It was. Yeah, it was a good show. And we got to apologize. We're kind of on summer hours. Tony's got a lot of big projects coming up that is going to take him away. I'm going to write a post about Airtame coming up here in the next week or so.
I'm going to put a link in to set up the Deploy Studio server. Okay. YouTube link. Let me see if I can find the best one. There's one. It's like a 12-year-old kid. It's the best one.
Awesome. Awesome.
Hold on.
No problem. All right, put it in. It'll be in the show notes, folks. And but anyway, I guess that's our show for today. So for IT Babble, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
And keep on babbling out there, and we will catch you on the next episode. Thanks for listening in.